Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Behind the Human. I'm your host, Mark Champagne. It's my job to unpack the stories and mental fitness practices of people living at the top of their game, personally and professionally. And today, we have a real treat, exciting, beautiful, awesome human, Tashawn, who is a mental wellness ambassador, TV personality, speaker, creator, and winner of Big Brother Canada. But above all, I'd say just someone out there really doing everything possible to help as many people possible through his story and his tools, his practices, his perspective. And I think you've come to the right show, brother. I mean, that's what we're all about here. You know, I think together, if we can have open, honest conversations about the real stuff of life and work and all of that, then, you know, we can navigate the ups and downs with a little bit more ease and grace. So, who are you?
You know, it's an interesting question because usually we go directly to titles. And that's like, yeah, I'm an urban planner and I won Big Brother and I do content creation. But who am I? I really think you kind of nailed a little bit of it. And when you said that, you know, I'm someone who likes to help people, as many people as I can. But really, it's not just about that for me. It's not about the others only. It's about myself too, right? So I'm someone who's keen on becoming the best version of myself and curious about life's questions as to what is limiting me from getting to that point? What's holding me back from being the best version of myself? Why do I feel how I feel? Why am I unhappy at times? Why does that last so long? So I'm someone who's always trying to answer life's questions as they apply to me, and as I solve those different equations as I move through life, I try to help others do the same, right? It's because I like to share. So I'm someone, I would say, who does love to help people as I'm helping myself at the same time.
So when did you last ask who the best version of yourself is? And I guess kind of the follow-up is where have you landed right now in who that person is?
I think I ask it every day. You know what I mean? I think when I journal every morning, I do ask myself, or when I journal sometimes at night or in the morning, at the night, I really ask myself, like, what did I do today? What are the highlights of my day? And the next day, I kind of ask what would make my day great. But as I'm thinking through these questions, I'm kind of asking, like, am I progressing? Am I getting better every day? And getting better doesn't have to mean huge accomplishments every day. It really has to mean, did I get through yesterday and do I feel good about it? Yeah, you know, I think there was a time, I've always asked what's the best version of myself, but there was a time where I asked that question and I would beat myself up because I didn't have major accomplishments every day, or I didn't get through my whole to-do list. I'm like, oh my gosh. But now it's like, there's a little bit more grace I've given myself, and I see that as being better than a year before. And I see that as the growth, rather than the growth being a checklist. The growth is now that I can give myself grace.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
100%. And what I love about it is that that's within our control, right? Like we often hang on to things that are completely outside of our kind of, you know, aura of control, and it's like external factors and so forth and all of that, which just it essentially kind of fires up a negative looping narrative that is really hard to pause and break, right? Whereas if you're asking these questions and you're like the goal stick or the measurement is progress from, you know, yesterday, today, or just even in the day within your, you know, kind of makeup and what you're doing, then like we can control. Like we can control how we perceive ourselves and so forth. And we can control some of the looping narratives and be like, oh, there, caught it. You know, there's that, you know, version of myself popping up again, but I'll let that kind of dissolve and so forth. What's the question I want to ask around this one? Because I want to get into because I know the whole Big Brother experience was a pretty big moment on many fronts. But before that, like, did things shift after that experience in terms of what you just shared when it comes to even you being, I guess, more graceful and kinder to yourself? Or have you all, even kind of prior to Big Brother and all of that, were you all, you also kind of down that path of self-development?
So Yes and no. So like prior to Big Brother, I definitely was on a path to self-development. And it's actually, I'm doing a TED talk on this next week, which is crazy. Is that,
okay.
But the self-development was driven from a different perspective. And we'll talk a lot about perspective versus perception, but like, I think my perspective for self-development before was a journey toward external validation. I was chasing, yes, I was trying to be the best version of myself, but I was doing it so others could see and be like, this guy's great.
Yeah.
Right. And I think after Big Brother, I got so much, this guy's great at the grandest level, where it's like the whole country and people are stopping me in the street and being like, oh my God, you're amazing. And then you won $100,000. And then, you know, you have a platform, like you're thinking, damn, I have it all. But I still didn't feel like, I felt empty.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my. And I think that's where I was always on that path to self-development. But the epiphany moment was kind of after I won Big Brother. And I still felt like I needed more and I didn't have enough. And I'm like, okay, where's this going to end? Because if I have all of this and I feel like this, what's it going to take? You know, is it going to take 100 million? Is it going to take like, and that's when I started like reflecting and thinking about, you know, you hear rap songs and your celebrities talk about more money, more problems, and you hear them talk about, it's not what you guys think. And, you know, you think you want to be rich, but you don't understand. And you start really, and I wasn't rich by any means, but it's like that sample size kind of gave me perspective.
Yeah. Gave you a bit of a taste. Yeah.
It was like, oh my gosh, I see what they could mean. I could see why, you know, as an artist, you get that number one song and it's great and everybody loves you. But as that week by week, it starts to wean, you start to feel like, oh my God, I got to make another one. And then you start to chase that external validation, and where the love actually has to come from within. It can't be tied to the external. And I think that was the realization I had post Big Brother, was that I cannot tie my self-worth to what others think of me. And I can't chase that growth just for external. It has to be for me. And I think that's where the perspective changed, but it was always a journey toward bettering myself and being the best version of myself for sure.
So did you have any, were you looking up to any people kind of going through that journey, or have any good mentors that, you know, had some level of, I guess, fame that could relate to, okay, like here's how you can kind of get back on the track or handle some of these, I think, very valid questions. Thank God you asked some of those questions, right? And just because, I mean, the alternative would have been, okay, well, you just keep going like, now I need the 100 million, or now I need this or the next show. And it's just, eventually though, you get to that point where like, wait a second. So thankfully, you know, that came somewhat early, right? So you could, you know, you save yourself a little bit of pain going through this like endless pursuit of dopamine releases, essentially.
No, it's so true. And I'm a very reflective person. So I like to ask why. It used to get me in trouble as a kid. I was like, why are we doing this? Why is this? Why is that? So I think, you know, it has its benefits in that, where it's like it's a mechanism where I respond to certain situations. I'm like, why was that like that? Or why do I feel this way? And I think in analyzing why I felt that way, it was like, okay, nothing's going to be enough externally. And I think that's how I came to that conclusion. I think you asked a question and then I forgot what it was.
Oh yeah. It's just around, you know, it's all good. And if you had any mentors that were guiding you through that time, or even people you're just looking up to that, you know, maybe weren't like a phone call or text away, but just, you know, a bit of a roadmap.
Interestingly enough, I've had mentors, but none that have like lasted long term as like my personal mentors, where I personally like meet them all the time and hang out with them and like sit down with them. I've never really had that be a long term thing. But I've had mentors in the form of like an author like Jay Shetty, you know, like looking up the work he does and really watching his podcast, reading his book. Like, I think that was very enlightening to me. I watched Stephen Bartlett on Diary of a CEO. I think like Lewis Howes was for a time. So I think like every different moment in my life, there is somebody who I look up to through that journey. but I don't think it's ever one person for me. I'm just not, I like to like get, I'm very, in, like, I'm very always interested in like hearing opinions from varying perspectives so that I can form an opinion myself. So I think I like hearing from different people about their different walks of life and how they navigate life so that it can help me navigate it. But I don't think there's any one person. Like, it's been Obama. It's been a bunch of people throughout
my life. I think that's great. And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to this one. And it's kind of well timed. I'm about to lead a group in a couple months through a 5-day flow around kind of, you know, who are you? Who are you striving to become? And really auditing our, you know, our belief systems and the relationships and so forth. And there's one part in that where we're going to go through, and I go through this myself. I feel like you'll resonate with this, is taking, there's a flow in there where we can almost put together our board of advisors for us personally that are people that we either know or don't know, you know, personally, you know, like, you know, I don't know, maybe you are directly linked with Obama and Jay Shetty. I mean, it's a small world. You never know. But let's say you aren't, you know, that you can take people like that, but then you can also take, you know, this incredible humans on my board of advisor, Maya Angelou, you know, she's not, you know, here today anymore, but there's this beautiful practice, a journaling flow that if we can take either a situation, or you can use it for let's just say 2024, you know, and link it to kind of your values and goals and what you want to achieve. And then ask the question, who are the people that I respect most and that I really value in these particular areas, right? And I mean, the people you mentioned on the podcast circuit, I mean, they've definitely been on my list as well. Rich Roll is a big one right now, for me, and that, like, that's specifically for interviewing and podcasting. But then there's, you know, like I said, Maya Angelou is helps me on stage because she has all these incredible practices when she was speaking in front of people. I guess my point with a bit of a rant here is that we all have access to studying a lot of these people, right? Then all of a sudden you can literally take, you know, a few months, or it could be your objective for the year where every month, you know, you're consuming you know, Jay's books, or, you know, Rich Roll or Maya Angelou's poetry and her commencement speeches and stuff like that. And now you're learning more and more, and like they're mentoring you linked to something that's valuable, you know, that you're trying to, you know, put out into this world. So I'm super happy you actually shared those examples. I think it's accessible, you know, like the way you're doing it, it's super accessible to many without having to have, you know, breakfast with Obama on a like Thursday morning, which would be fantastic if you're listening. We're open to that one, but you know what I mean? You never know.
100%. And what that really speaks to too is like, I think we can relate to somebody in one, at least one way. And I think we see a part of ourselves in many different people. So I think that it's like, it's cool that we can take little samples and little nuggets from a bunch of different people and help that make up who we are. Because like, I guess like, you know, they'll say like, sometimes you're an average of the five people you hang around the most.
Yeah.
I believe that to a degree, but I believe, you are an average of all the different things you've experienced. And you're like, that's what builds your character. So it's like the things you read, the people you listen to, the podcasts you watch, the people you hang out with, like all of that make up you. And it's cool to be able to expand that as far as you can.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. Okay. I want to ask though, I don't want to get too far because, you know, myself included and probably many listening have not been on Big Brother or familiar with the show. If people aren't, maybe you just give a quick little rundown on what that show is all about. But like, how did that even come about? Like, how does one get onto a show like that? And then, I mean, you won it. That's a whole other, that's a whole other feat, obviously. But you give us a little behind the scenes. Like, what's it all about?
So, like, Big Brother, if anybody's watched Survivor, but I won't even explain it like Survivor, I'll just explain it on its own. Big Brother, essentially, it's a social game. So George Orwell had a book called 1984. Or, you know, they put people into a controlled location under surveillance 24/7. And you get to see, like, how does their behavior change? Who's in charge? Who becomes the leaders? Who becomes the followers? Do people turn on each other? Do people, you know, are some people eating and others are not? Like, how does society behave when we're just confined to a location? And I think that's exactly what Big Brother is. You know, there's a bunch of contestants that they put in a house together, and every week it's our job to eliminate somebody.
Okay.
Right? So there's a series of competitions where, you know, you get a head of household, the head of household nominates two people for eviction, and then the rest of the house votes on whether or not they want to evict those people. You could be evicted for a variety of reasons. You could be too liked, not liked enough, too much of a threat in competitions, too smart, too stupid. Like,
yeah,
the reasons are endless for why you could be evicted from the house, but the goal is to stay till the very end. And at the end, a jury of your peers will vote for the winner. So the irony is you have to dodge all these evictions.
Yeah.
But still have a good enough relationship with everyone or be able to convince them that you deserve to win the game.
Yeah.
So they always say the game is won, it's earned, because you have to, it's not just something that you could just win everything and win. At the end of the day, people have to look and be like, no, you deserve it, and then give you the win. So it's a very
interesting. How did you manage that? So I didn't see your season. So how, I only know that it's thankfully, it seems like the producers in the show gave you a persona that you identified with, and you were kind of a good human in the scheme of things, right? Which is awesome. But I'm curious, like, did you go in with some mental strategy or some practices that were helpful? Because that's a lot to manage. Like, you've got to manage a lot of personalities, and to your point, you've got to survive kind of the day, but then think about the bigger game here, right? It's a lot floating around in the mind.
100%. It was very stressful, and it's hard to have like a foolproof strategy. Like, some will say this is the greatest game ever because it's such a balance of like mental, social, physical. Like, it's literally everything incorporated into one. But I think the overall strategy has to be like, first of all, one of them is like, be dynamic, you know, change as the game changes. So if you and I are friends in the game, there could come a point where it's probably not my best interest to be your friend. But I have to recognize this and act accordingly rather than be like, well, we're friends and I got to stay friends with you. So it's like being dynamic was a really big part of it. I think establishing a relationship with everybody was very important because it gets awkward in the game where like you meet somebody and you haven't spoken to them in 40 days. Now it's like, hey, can we, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. So I think like strategies like that helped me navigate the game. And it was really about like being dynamic, having a relationship with everybody. What was another one I had? Don't show your cards too soon. You know, it's kind of like if you show your cards too early, now people know you've taken sides and now they can get you out of the game. So it's like, it was really for me, I think what helped me the most though, the skill that I have that helped me the most through the game was emotional intelligence. Okay. I could always sense how someone was feeling, what mental state they're in, whether they were lying, whether they were telling the truth. So I think that skill for me was like the most helpful skill because it's like I knew who to get close with, when and where. And I think that really helped me up.
Where do you think you picked that up?
I think I picked that up as a child because I feel like I moved so much. You know, like I was, you know, with my mom, my grandparents, I went to this school, I went to that school. Like I moved around quite a bit. So I think it was like I always had to adapt to different environments, right? So it's like, you know, I had friends who were in the hood, then I had friends who were like rich white French immersion kids, and I had friends who were, you know what I mean? Like I had to like navigate these different arenas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It wasn't always easy. But I think from those experiences, it's like it showed me like, okay, like this is how you navigate these different spaces.
Yeah. What a skill though, Ted. I mean, because that's, I mean, there's the show, but having good and well-trained emotional intelligence just across life in general is pretty hard to argue that that's not super important, right?
The challenge with that, interestingly enough, is like, I never thought it was a skill because it's like, if I asked you like, how do you monetize emotional intelligence? You'd probably be like, I don't know. But if I was like, if you're, you know, if you're really good at engineering or you're really good at being a doctor. Like, you know, like their skills are so tangible. It's like, okay, like you're good at that. You can make millions on that. But for me, it's like, what do you do with emotional intelligence? I think that was
Yeah.
the answer to that question. But
you win $100,000 on Big Brother. That's that what you do with it. Oh, man. Nah. Has just everything you just shared about that experience, has that kind of trickled over into some of the work that you're doing now? Like some of what you had to, well, obviously the emotional intelligence, but any other kind of strategies and things that you learned going through that experience? I guess the question is that showing up in any other ways in your life right now?
I think there's a few things I learned from the experience. I think one of them just from the overall experience was that there's more to life than the path that you decided that you're on. So like before I went on the show, I was an urban planner and I was like, okay, I'm going to be an urban planner, and then I'm going to be the director of planning, and then I'm going to be the CEO. You know what I mean? Like it was very much like my life is this trajectory. And going on the show and coming off and seeing like all the opportunities in the media space and entertainment and influencing. And so it kind of opened my eyes like, oh my gosh, there's more to life than just the path that you've decided. So I think that was one thing I learned from the overall experience. The game though taught me to trust my instincts. And I think it's such a cliche thing to say, like trust your gut. Mm-hmm. But from that experience, I realized like my gut is right. That emotional intelligence, like knowing that someone is lying to you or knowing that something is not right or knowing that you have to do this versus that, is what arguably won me that game. Yeah. So it was like, what you believe in your heart is truly what you should do. But in the real world, where there's hundreds of your friends are in your ear, you're watching the news, there's all these like different little external factors that a lot of times strip you away from doing what you in your heart believe is right. And I think the show showed me that like what I believe inside is right 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And that was a big lesson to take away from it. I think that it gave me the courage to go on the journey that I'm on now, quit my job and say, you know what? I'm going to do something. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to figure it out on the way. And I think I've done a pretty good job of figuring it out because I just went with what I felt was right in my heart.
Yeah. So important. I mean, because we all have that. I mean, that intuitive sense is sometimes, I think, louder in others and quieter in some as well. But I think, this is just my opinion, that when it's quiet, usually there's a lot of other things kind of spinning around in your mind and body, you know, and you're kind of numbing out that intuitive sense. But any of us, and you know, it's almost been 400 people that have been on the show, and I'd say that the commonality or the theme across all of you incredible humans is everyone is finding some way to still their mind in some capacity, whether that's asking questions or taking a walk, but there's something. And I think if we can do that and make that a consistent ritual and practice, then all of a sudden your intuitive sense is like, you hear it, it's there. And then you start training yourself as well to feel it and see that in other situations where it might be kind of loud and noisy, or there's a lot going on, like in a kind of TV show or in a boardroom or in a meeting, like whatever the situation is, right? You start picking up like, ah, oh, there it is. And like, I ignored that before and I learned the lesson there. So let's not do that again, right?
No, it's truly amazing, like our ability to analyze the voices in our head and what they tell us, and like think about, like we always think about, where does that voice come from? What is it saying? What is the truth? What are the ultimate truth? And that's it. And I think that takes work, right? I think in order to trust yourself, you have to love yourself to a certain degree. And I think a lot of us don't build that relationship with ourselves. It sounds like it's crazy to think, but it's like some people, when you said, who are you? That was your first question. Some people can't answer that.
Oh yeah. Trust me. I know.
Well, I'm sure you know, because you've seen it.
Some people I have to push back. Be like, well, that's what you do. But let's, again, you know, and it's usually, And that's why I ask it, because, I mean, selfishly, there's a bit of a hidden motive on my side. There's one, asking the question to for all of us to get to know you quite quickly from a human perspective. But for the guests that haven't spent time on that question, you can tell. So you get an answer and it starts things off. But for those people, and I usually get the messages after, then they spend some time after the interview and they think about that question. And that's the part that lands in my heart, because, you know, I'm biased, of course, but I think, and you probably would agree with this, but the more time we spend on ourselves and getting to know, you know, really who we are and who we really want to be, like the ripple effect of that is exponential across the world. Like, we can really step into, you know, what we're meant to do and like the energy we want to put out there and so forth. So for me, it's the greatest gift when people reflect on some of these questions after the fact. So I'll keep going through some of the uncomfortable, and it doesn't happen that often, but some of those uncomfortable moments of, wow, that's, we're starting off the interview really hot. Yes, we are. It'll cool down from here though. It's all good. It's all good. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I mean, you touched on it, of course, you know, kind of like what happened after the show, right? Because, you know, you're now in the public eye and, you know, you got a good lump sum of cash and still felt, you know, or had this feeling of emptiness and started to ask some of the tougher questions and so forth, which I feel like has definitely led to a lot of the work that you're doing now, right? Around, and I pulled some language from some other interviews you've done, but just like lightening the conversation a bit, like, just, you know, your dad's a comedian, right? I think you shared. Yeah. And like, and I resonate with this, like laughter and humor. And I think you said something to this effect, like when we can laugh about something, we can advance the conversation. Right. So I'd love to just spend some time on that around just, I'm almost hesitant to say mental health, because I rarely say that on this show, because I just really try to keep it as light and mental fitness, and that we can all access, you know, tools and practices. But let's talk about kind of where you sit on, I guess, the importance and what you want to do with having these conversations and getting your message out.
I think for me, like, part of having these conversations, like I said earlier, it's like, it's partially to help me. When I talk about something, it means I'm realizing it and I'm becoming more comfortable with it. And that means like I'm accepting it. So for me, it's that vulnerability helps me. But at the very same time, vulnerability breeds vulnerability. So like when I share and I'm vulnerable about something, others will share with me too. And then the result of that is deeper connection. Mm. So like for me, there's so many reasons why I do it. I do it to help others. I do it to help myself. But I'm also like, I crave connection with people. I crave deep connections. Like, if you were not to sit down in a restaurant, we could be like, hey, how are you? The weather? Like, yeah, could do that. But I hate that. I hate that. I would want to talk to you about like real stuff. Like, how are you? Like, how did you get to be who you are? Like, what stopped you? Like, what were the obstacles? So for me, it's really about connection. But we don't always connect. Like, the vulnerability piece doesn't always have to be sad and dark, even though there are sad stories in them, right? Yeah. And it's like my mom and I actually have the most laughs about trauma and depression and anxiety. And it's like, she's actually one of the funniest people when she talks about it. She'll just be like, it just feels like there's this person chasing me around the house and be, you're not good enough. And it's like, kind of, when you picture that in your mind, it's like, yes, it's hard, but it's like, you can laugh about that.
Yeah.
And if you like picture it as like, if I made like a piece of content that showed someone chasing you around the house, being like, you're not good enough, you're not this, you're not, it could be funny, but it's like, it's highlighting the truth of what that feels like. Mm-hmm. But it's actually being like, this is, we can laugh about it because now we can talk about it.
Mm-hmm. What makes it approachable? Like, so important.
Exactly. Right. And you think about like over time, anything that was taboo at one point, like think of like race, for example.
Yeah.
Like there was a time where it was like, you know, there's white people and there's black people and there's these people. And it was like, we couldn't, like, we're very much like, we're living in a time where there was no acceptance.
Yeah.
Now that there's more acceptance, now I hear comedians make race jokes all the time.
Yeah.
It's funny. We can laugh about it because now we're more comfortable with it. So yeah. I think when we're able to laugh about something, there's more comfort about it, and we can talk, we feel more free talking about it. Right. So it's like, for me, I want to advance the conversation to that point, because now if we can talk about it more freely, more people can engage in the conversation. And if more people can engage in the conversation, then we're helping more people. Because think about the world we're living in right now. Like it's times we've never seen before. Look at the economy. Look at the political climate. We just got out of a pandemic. Like there's just so many reasons for people to feel like this is a heavy time. Mm-hmm. So I think like our mental health and wellness is as important as it's ever been. So it's like, how do I, because I'm struggling with it. So it's like, how do I help others while helping myself at the same time? And I think that's the question I try to answer. And it's that is why, that is kind of my why.
Do you see the kind of the, what we're, you know, laughing about as a bit of a gauge on like where we're at with these topics? Is that kind of, yes. Is that a bit of a measuring stick for you?
100%. Yeah. Like I said, like if we can laugh about something, it's in a good place. When we can't laugh about it, it means like we're not comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like think about
it. I like that.
Yeah. If you can't laugh about something, it means like there's an insecurity there. Mm-hmm. Like if I said to you, like, for example, I have a friend who's bald, right? If I was like, you're bald, and he's like, why you being?
Yeah.
It's like he could feel like he could be offended by that because that's an insecurity for him. Where if I said like, you're bald, and we just laugh about it, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Right. Or like I have a pimple on my face and you're like, ah, look at your pimple. And I'm like pissed. It means that like, I really feel bad about this pimple. Whereas like, if I just kind of was accepted it and was like, yeah, this is what it does. Ah, look, that's actually funny. Like it's on the middle of my nose. It's very different, right? When you can laugh about something, it means it's something that you've accepted and you're comfortable with. But you can't laugh about it. It means you're not comfortable about it with it. Right.
So yeah, I like that. I like that as a bit of a kind of temperature check on where we're at just in general with some pretty big topics. Cause I've always viewed, humor and I use it as a practice as well, is just a beautiful way to lighten subjects and make them approachable. Then we can get into conversation, right? And from a different perspective, including with ourselves, like what you share about your mom. Like it's the depression or the anxiety could just live in you, or you can visually zoom it out of your body and be like, ah, there's, you know, anxious Jill or something coming back to the party to kind of mess with me. And it's a different, completely different vibe. The question though, that as you're sharing this, that was coming to mind, and I don't know if I have the answer, we can kind of brainstorm a bit, but like, what are we not laughing about right now that, you know, could use a bit of lightness? Are there any topics that you've been thinking about that are happening right now that are like, man, we could really use some more conversation there? I mean, there's...
Globally? In general?
Yeah, just in general. Is there anything like just kind of that pops or comes to mind? Because it really, attaching the humor part resonates quite a bit, at least with me.
I don't think like... The only thing that would come to mind to me is like the biggest global issue that there is right now is the Israel versus Palestine thing. But it's like, who's ready to laugh about that?
Yeah.
I'm like, fair. Where would you start? Right? Because it's this very sensitive topic for very many people. And it's like, if you say one thing now, it's like, now you're on this side. If you say another thing, now you're on that side. But it's like, I think that situation could use a lot of light, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we don't want peace in the world.
Yeah.
We all want that.
Yeah.
Well, now it's turned into this ugly fight that, you know, there's really nothing anybody could really say that could make them seem, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you're either on one side or the other. And it's like, why does it have to be like that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It could just be like, I just want to see everybody go home to their families and love each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's definitely like, that's to me is like, that's all I see on the news. That's all you see in the headlines. Like, yeah, we could use a lot of light in that.
Yeah.
Even like our country, like now, you know, there's the view that Canada is one of the worst places to live and everyone's leaving. Like,
yeah, it is.
You know what I mean? It's like, What happened?
Yeah, like that's a question I ask often ask myself as well. I have not found an acceptable answer, at least in my opinion, yet. But it's I agree. Like, what happened? It's there's been many times where I just growing up as a kid, where I just can't resonate with this. But now, over the last like 3 to 4 years, it's just been a bit of shame to be. You know, I've always been really proud Canadian. There's just some stuff that happens here. I'm like, what the hell? Like, this is...
How do we get here?
Yeah, how do we get here? Yeah.
And you know, and I think what's also challenging about the world we live in today, it's we're in such a polarized world. If you have this view, now you're in a category. And it's like, again, how do we get to this?
Yeah. Well, we just can't... I mean, I think that the biggest thing that seems to be lost... is just communication or like open dialogue without, and I appreciate and realize that like these are all very sensitive and highly emotional situations, but we have to approach some of this stuff without judgment and without, and just be able to converse, right? And I feel like that's where so many things just break down, whether it's you know, what we went through with the pandemic, which reminds me, like, a lot of the what's happening with the wars, and more so the media coverage of them, feels very similar to what it felt like from a media perspective on going through COVID. It's like there's, again, these clear divides, right? When they're not clear divides, like, things are complicated. And, you know, it's okay that we can talk about things. It's
you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
I was thinking of a platform. If it was a weird brain like thought I had, I'm like, what if there was a platform where you could get someone from each side of an issue, and they talk about it, they have a debate, but not in a way where it's angry, where it's a way it's a conversation. So everybody can watch two people polarizing views speak about, you know, each other's how they see it. So that at least you can take away, like, okay, I saw that view, I saw this view. Whereas, like, you know, there's people who, you know, for example, with climate change, there's people who are climate change deniers. And I'm like, why do they deny it? I'm curious. Like, what is it about?
Yeah, let's just talk about it.
It's not like, why don't, like, or the earth is flat. Like, why do you believe this? I'm not like, oh my God, you think you deny climate change, you're evil. It's like, that's not how I see it. I'm just like, but why? Like, what are your arguments for this? I want to know.
Yeah.
And I wish there was a space where we could safely, you know, have these discussions where people can just say, okay, I believe this and I believe this. I'm like, well, this is why I think this and this is why I think that.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be very informative for the world to see two people talk about something in an amicable way rather than be like, oh yeah, you don't like this, I hate you. It's like, I don't know how we got to that.
Yeah. I mean, now my mind's spinning. Like, I feel like that's the show or that's the network or something where there's an element of providing, speaking of emotional intelligence and whatnot, like just providing some, I don't know if training is a strong word, but just helping facilitate a conversation in a way, exactly what you're describing, that the goal here is not to fire up emotion. It's to just converse and talk about different facts and ask questions. Questions that are on everyone's minds. And like that to me would be okay. If I'm thinking as a viewer, there's an endless amount of topics that you can cover, and you could literally put people, like, you know, face to face. There's a show he was on, I'm forgetting his name, Adidas. It's recent that he was on the Yes And show, where they talk about relationships, and it's, you know, either couples or like parents and stuff like that. And it's kind of that premise where they've got multiple cameras and you're watching, you know, a tough conversation unfold, but from a place of love. And I feel like that kind of extended to topics that are circulating and situations that are circulating around the world, not only would be informative, but also I feel like we could all use a really good dose of, well, here's how you could have a conversation with your best friend that may be completely on the other side of this opinion or this situation. with like, so it's educational or informative, but also educational, right? And equips us with some tools to coexist, I guess is the way to put it.
Mark, are we onto something?
I think we're, I mean, we are recording this. So this is good. Maybe I'll hold the release until we can sort out some legalities and put put something in place.
You know what? I really believe it's a good idea. Like, yeah. I like from the bottom of my heart, I'm like, it would be a good idea because there's so many topics where, you know, we're so divided. And it's crazy because like I was in Vancouver the other day and Fox News came on. And for some reason, my whole... My TV was just on Fox News the whole time. Basketball would come on, but the news would come on. And I was mind-blowing by, because usually I'm always seeing CNN.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing what they're saying on Fox. I'm like, this is the complete opposite of what I hear on CNN. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I'm not, and these are not bad people speaking.
They really
believe what they're saying. They're not even like, they're angry about it. They're mean. They're just like, this is how I feel about this. This is this. Joe Biden's an idiot. Like, and it's just like, that's really how they feel.
Yeah. Keep going.
I was gonna say another example of this was like I was dating this girl back when I was in Alberta, and she's like, I have to do this project for school where I have to go to a rally of somebody who has opposite views of me. So we went to a Wexit rally, and what they wanted for was Western Canada to exit Canada. So I went to the rally and I was like, nice people, but they were like, the things they were saying, I was in disbelief. Like, they're like, oh, it's a communist country now, and we need to leave, and they don't care about the oil. Like, it was just, but that's how they felt. That's how they saw it. And it was just like, that opened my eyes. I'm like, oh my gosh, people have polarized perspectives than I do, and it's okay. They're not evil. Yeah.
No, but just, I mean, I they're not evil. I agree. And I fall into this as well. Like, you, and I mean, yeah, I don't want to play kind of the victim on this, but I think many of us are victims to the algorithms of, right? Like, you have to be so intentional with what you're consuming, because all of a sudden, basically the very kind of glaring contrast that you notice with Fox and CNN on TV, like we don't necessarily feel that in social. It just like trickles in like a sneaky way, but essentially the same thing's happening, and like we're just getting reinforced, or we're reinforcing our beliefs, which is, I don't think is good for anyone. Like, you know, even if it's not a like a malicious thing, it's, we should probably be a little bit more well-rounded and understand what's happening. So yeah, I think we'll have to continue that conversation. I feel like we are onto something on with that.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll keep it going after the fact. I do want to respect your time, so I'll start wrapping up. The thing I'd love to ask you about kind of in closing is just to get a better idea of some of your like core or fundamental, what I would call mental fitness practices or rituals and like activities or things that you do to help train your mind to work for you instead of against you. With the caveat of knowing that, you know, these things probably work really well personally for you, but that also means there's someone on the other side that might be like, okay, since I, you know, that might, you know, flow well with my life, but it's not a prescription, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. But more as inspiration of, hey, like maybe I can try this thing out. So yeah, let me know what's kind of like in check for you right now. And if there's anything that you're, you know, you want to try more of, as the year goes on.
You raise an excellent point. And I was like, I actually say this in my TED talk where I'm like, you know, mental fitness is like fitness. A keto diet may give me 6-pack abs, but might not give you that. And that's okay. It's like, find the thing that works for you. I always encourage people to try different things to see what works for you. And for me, it's like, there's a blend of things. Obviously, it's like, it's not one thing.
Yeah.
A really big thing for me is actually reading. Reading is huge for me, because reading allows me to see perspective. It allows me to take a minute away from all the thoughts that I'm having and immerse myself into a different way of thinking. So reading has been really big for me and really helpful.
What do you read? Is there like certain topics that you gravitate towards?
Usually it's like about personal growth, happiness, gratitude. Like I like to read about those topics. I also like to read about other topics I'm just interested in. But the ones like are really about like mindset and like just talks about like getting through life. I really love for, sometimes just books about people's lives. Like I read LeBron James's book the other day, and I was like mesmerized of how alike he seems to be. Like I just saw so many similarities between our character, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was kind of inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed his book, but like reading is a really big one for me. When I start my day off reading, finish my day off reading, it really puts me usually in a good place because there's always a great takeaway in a pot. It puts me into a positive space. Gratitude has been another huge one. Like I have a gratitude journal.
Okay.
I list three things I'm grateful for literally every day. And it could be as small as the bed I slept in or the meal I had or a person that did something really kind for me or, you know, the fact that I have enough, you know, so it's like it's gratitude has been huge. I'm just in the sense like it really helps shift your focus away from like what you don't have, you know, because sometimes I get caught up in like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this. And you have to think like, wait, but this is what I do have.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I have had to train my mind. Like it's practice to be able to catch your mind saying all these things and go, wait, stop. Mm-hmm. I can control this voice and I can control what we're focusing on here.
Yeah. So like in million times a day, like that's the other thing, right? It just, it's constant. So it's, I think I, and myself included and everyone listening, like just be kind to yourself that like, it's not a one and done kind of scenario. Like, oh, I caught it. And I'm like, well, wait a second. I should be grateful. Like the power is on here and we're like recording this with pretty good technology. Like a lot of people in the world don't have access to this stuff. But then it, you know, 30 seconds later, you start like, ah, oh, so-and-so didn't write back to my email. And like, oh, how am I going to make, you know? So it's just like, we just, I think, acknowledge the facts. Like this is what's happening, you know, over and over. And but eventually we'll train ourselves out of that. Just like physically, like you start to see the benefits, the more, you know, you hit the gym, like you're like, oh, that those muscles are growing or I'm stretching and I feel better. I feel looser. I feel more nimble. But it takes some work.
Yeah, your brain is a muscle at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
And it's like you have to work on it. And what's interesting about it too is that like I'm reading this book called Solve for Happy. And it's
Mo Gaudet?
Is that like that.
Yeah.
And it's like it's mind blowing because I got to take economics, so I love math. And it's just mind-blowing how we break certain things down. He's like, well, happiness is an equation. If your expectations meet your reality, you'll be happy. But if it's if you expected more and got less, you're unhappy. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And like something as simple as that was like, you know, you have all these expectations for this. Or if you read the book, The Four Agreements, it's kind of like, it tells you about like setting expectations. It tells you about, you know, don't make assumptions. And that's like, life is so simple, but we overcomplicate it a lot.
Yes, brother. Yes.
And our default state as babies, we were just happy. And like as life went on, we're jaded by this event, jaded by that. And it's like, that has caused us to now process things in a way that make us unhappy. So like gratitude reminds us of what we do have and the greatness of life and how beautiful it can be. And it's not to ignore the things that like challenging things will happen, bad things will happen to you. That's life. But understanding that, you know, if you can change your perspective on certain situations, it doesn't have effect. It can't control you as much.
Yeah.
And then meditation, another one. Being able to just be still with my mind and control that voice in my head has been a really big one for me because that voice, and we talked about it a little bit, like that voice can be so negative and tell you all kinds of mean things. So like being able to sit with myself has been pretty life-changing. And that's the one thing I really want to get better at because I talk about this a lot too. Like imagine you treated yourself as a friend, right? So if I was talking to you, I'd be like, you told me you had a bad day, I'd be like, yo, it's okay. You'd be all right. You know, if you told me you didn't get this job, I'd be like, you're still great. I'll get the next one. Mm-hmm. But if these situations were you,
talking to yourself, no way. Yeah. You're a loser. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You suck. It's wild. You're losing. You're not doing enough. Like, what were you thinking? You know, so it's like when you start treating yourself like a friend, it really changes, it shifts your mindset around how you treat yourself and what you say to yourself and how do you be like, can you sit alone with yourself? Like if I took myself out of my body and I was friends with me, could I just hang out with me? How hard is
that? Ooh, I like that. That's a scary and powerful question all in one.
But yeah, how hard is that to do? You know, what do I say to myself? Can I spend, like, you know, most of us can't be alone with ourselves. Like, even the thought of going to dinner by yourself is insane to people. Like, you go to dinner and sit by yourself. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what can you go to the movies by yourself? Why couldn't you? But it's like a lot of us, it's like, it seems like, what are people going to think? They're going to think I have no friends. No, you just love you. And I think we have to spend more time loving ourselves. And that's the real journey I'm on. And I think different tools will work for me at different phases through my life.
Of course.
But for now, those are the ones that have resonated with me at this point.
Those are awesome. Awesome. I wrote down this question. Would you hang out with your internal self?
Right.
I mean, there's a nice starting point. And I would encourage, and I'm going to do the same thing. I'm writing that. I'm going to take that question. I'm going to start tomorrow. I do a lot of my journaling first thing in the morning, kind of fresh mind, and just answer that question without judgment and just, you know, pick up some data so that you can, okay, well, here's, you know, how I answered it. Here's some areas and maybe I can make some edits. And then set yourself up to make those edits, which could be, you know, some books, podcasts, whatever. But just like fuel the mental empire and the internal empire with like good quality stuff. Just like, you know, if you eat well, you're going to feel better. If you eat like garbage, like you're going to feel like garbage and you're going to start seeing that as well. So I love that. I love that perspective. Oh man, well we could go on forever and we're going to link back. Everyone stay tuned for our new network about the launch in 2024 once we figure out those details. But I'd love to close things off, ask you where people could follow along the journey, keep up with your work, and of course, everyone listening, if this conversation resonated with you and you're still here, first of all, thank you for being here and being present with us and share it out to your crew. It, you know, the ripple effect of that is it means a lot to all of us. So thank you. So where do we find you, brother?
You can find me at Tashaun X Carter on Instagram. That's like where I do most of my stuff. But like whenever you search Tashaun, T-Y-C-H-O-N.
Yeah.
You'll find something. Yeah. It's like, well, I don't have that name, you know?
So yeah. It's true.
You know, because like, I want to get back into YouTube again. So I'll be doing more of that. I want to create like my show of my life and the different things that I do just to, you know, help share my story and inspire. So I'm out there.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on, your time, and of course, your higher and bigger mission. You know, you're a great human. So thank you for everything you do. And, for hanging out with your internal self, because the results of that, you know, it's starting to help, or is helping a lot of people around the world. So thank you.
No, thank you. I'm so grateful I've done this. It was therapeutic and I needed it. So I really appreciate it. We got to do this again. Like we got to do more. I can see us doing some stuff. Like if it seems, yeah, I'm excited.